Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Slightly delayed start to the Dana and Parks program today. We wanted to bring you some of the NTSB news conference as this nation watches in sadness and in respect to the 67 souls that were lost last night in the skies over Washington, D.C., as a plane that took off from Wichita collided with an Army helicopter, a Black Hawk, right outside of Reagan National Airport. And there are as many questions as there are little answers. And so we wanted to go to the best of the best. And we bring in Commander Jesse Reed, retired U.S. Navy, and also a commercial airline pilot and a good friend of the program. Commander Reed, welcome.
Scott, Dana, how you guys doing? I wish it was under better circumstances to be on the show.
Yeah, we both do. One of the things we want to talk about, Commander, is, you know, it is just so rare that we lose a commercial airliner of any type under any circumstance in the United States. It is early, but I guess what were your first thoughts as, you know, bits of information started to be known about what has happened here?
Well, you bring up a good point. I think it's worth reiterating, and it's certainly not to be insensitive to everyone who's suffering from this, but it does remain the safest form of transportation, you know, compared to all their forms. Driving is way more deadly. That's not to make light of this instance here. It sort of has captured everyone because it's just right there for everyone to see. My first thoughts are usually just emotional. Just the absolute devastation that everyone who witnessed that. I think of the other pilots sitting at the runways waiting to take off and seeing this happen just hundreds of feet from their location. I think of the air traffic controllers who witnessed this, and my hat's off to all of them as professionals as well, because when these sorts of things happen, I was just kind of listening to some of the air traffic control commentary in tapes that have been released, and they continue to do their job, even though, you know, at an emotional level, I'm sure they're just absolutely stricken with the grief of the moment happening, but they still have a job to do. They still have to keep, you know, dozens of other airplanes in the airspace safe and out of the way, and they did that.
Jesse, I assume in your career you have flown into Reagan National?
Yes, I have several times.
Okay. I was talking to another friend of mine who also happens to be a pilot, a commercial pilot, and he was explaining to me, and maybe you could shed more light on this, that obviously the air traffic around Reagan National is exceptional, to say the least.
But absolutely.
But that planes and helicopters kind of have their own roads in the sky, if you will, was the way he explained it. And clearly those roads got a little blurred last night, that helicopters stay in their own lane and airplanes stay in their own lane. Is that true?
Yeah, that is. And so the listeners understand, you know, helicopter traffic mixing with commercial airline traffic at any airport, it's not unique to Reagan National. That happens a lot. I've been on plenty of flights and approaches where you get basically a heads up from air traffic control that there is some sort of helicopter operating in the same area. Typically, there's two types of ways that you can operate when flying. You can operate how most commercial airliners operate, which is under IFR, which stands for Instrument Flight Rules. When you're operating on an IFR flight plan, air traffic control pretty much owns you. They own the direction you fly. They own the route that you fly. And you as the pilot, you're just following their directions for the most part. And that's all due to safety and deconfliction reasons. Whereas the other way you can operate is called VFR, Visual Flight Rules. Now, any kind of air traffic control communications are typically advisory in nature, and helicopters tend to do this because they just fly so low to the ground compared to commercial airplanes. So it's not uncommon to have around an airspace, a busy airspace like that, both IFR and VFR traffic sort of commingling together. But, you know, having flown out of Reagan many times, there's so many procedures. It's what we call a special air crew qualification airport. Not all airports have that designation. You have to go through specific training just to be able to fly in and out of that airport because of the nature of that airspace. Not only is it so busy, but it's around so many nationally sensitive areas that you have to avoid. You know, the White House is right off the north side of the airport, right. So is the Pentagon, and you can't fly over these things.
Let me ask you this, Jesse. We do know this. Air traffic control received no response from the Black Hawk helicopter seconds before the collision. As American Airlines Flight 5342 was set to land at Reagan, air traffic control asked the helicopter pilots whether they saw that plane. And you've heard this communication, Commander. It says, PAT-25, do you have the CRJ in sight? Referring to their call sign. There was no response from the helicopter. The controller made another attempt. PAT-25 passed behind this CRJ. Without asking you to speculate, air traffic control is in the business of warning pilots and others that there is somebody else right there. What happens when they receive no response? I mean, you as a pilot are to respond immediately, are you not?
Yes, typically. And I think a lot of it, too, again, they're relying on the fact that you can't fly around this airspace without some specific training. So there's usually, it's kind of a controlled chaos is kind of the best way to describe it, where, you know, it seems insane when you look at a bird's eye view of all this happening, or you watch the little air traffic control kind of video replays of different call signs and their transponder codes popping up, and you think, how is this humanly possible for all these airplanes to be doing this? But it's a very beautifully choreographed thing, typically. It's not uncommon to not get a response right away. I mean, I can say in my own aviation career, there's kind of an age-old adage, which the priorities of aviation are you aviate first, then you navigate, then you communicate. So the talking on the radio is kind of the last priority of those three. Aviating is the part where you're trying to avoid the ground, you're trying to avoid other airplanes. Navigate, make sure you're going in the right direction, and then finally communicate. As the last part, times in my own career where maybe I didn't respond right away was because I was kind of test saturated with the first two priorities there. I'm actually flying the airplane, keeping it under control, and then making sure it's going to the right piece of the sky.
Jesse, I wonder, because of the location of Reagan National Airport, it is literally 3 miles from the White House, and which means 3 miles from the Capitol. Is it not time to start thinking, and as busy as the skies are around Reagan National, do we move Reagan National out like a KCI where it's 20 miles north of downtown?
Boy, that's a great question. I can just say anecdotally, it's kind of a love-hate relationship with a place like Reagan for me. The part that I like is I like the unique challenge of it. It is not like flying into KCI Airport where you come in on a 10-mile straight in. The approaches are very dynamic. You're usually, if you've ever flown in on the runway that they're flying into, runway 33, the approach that goes in there is basically a continuing left-hand turn all the way to basically touchdown, and you just get this beautiful view of the city. So for that reason, and like the same reason I like flying into JFK or LaGuardia, you know, you get these great views. But the hate part of the relationship is exactly kind of what we're talking about today, which is there's really no margin for error. And you've got to really be on your game and paying attention to keep, you know, that beautiful chaos going, keep the choreography going as it's supposed to go. You know, that obviously we could sit here and say it should be moved or whatever and kind of speculate. You know, I know the convenience of that airport because it's right in the middle of everything. You can land there and you can be at Capitol Hill in 10 minutes after right. You walk out the door, if you so choose. So, you know, that's not anything I can speculate about or have an opinion on, but, and what are the chances of that actually happening? I don't know, but it is a very different environment than say flying into KCI.
There are some lawmakers in Washington who are saying Reagan was only, built to take care of 10 million, 15 million passengers a year coming in. Now it gets 25 million. It is too busy. Is that true?
You know, I can't answer that question exactly, but you could say that about any airport. I mean, look at our own airport here in Kansas City. It outgrew itself eventually, and we have this new amazing terminal that was built over the last few years. So you could say that, I think, about any airport. I don't think that's the factor here, really.
No, I mean, Commander, I was just going to say, and I know, you know, we got to be careful a little bit here, but, you know, the issue here was not, you know, air traffic control fatigue or, you know, we don't have anyone working. It doesn't appear. Air traffic control did its job and mm-hmm. said, hey, do you see that plane? You need to move. Do you see that? Hello. You know, what's going on? Did not hear back for whatever reason, did not hear back. And so I don't know what else could have been done from that standpoint.
In aviation, we use this term, at least in the military aviation, we use this term for risk management called the Swiss cheese model. It sounds kind of goofy. But the theory behind it is you take a bunch of slices of cheese. Each slice is kind of like a bunch of risk factors, if you will, of the inherent danger of flying airplanes. And a piece of Swiss cheese has a hole in it, and that represents one specific hazard. And you could line up a bunch of pieces of Swiss cheese and you never be able to see through all the different holes. Well, every once in a while, those holes line up. And that's, you know, usually when something happens. So this is as far as I'm willing to speculate right now. My guess is that as the facts come out and the investigation is done, we're going to start to see this Swiss cheese model in effect where we're going to see this one factor that played into it. And then there's another factor, maybe in one of the other aircraft. And it's all going to kind of line up into this perfect storm. And I guess you could, another way of saying it is you could say the planets aligned, except unfortunately in a bad way here, that this accident happened. One thing that people should understand too, military aircraft typically operate on a different frequency band. And air traffic control monitors both of these. So civilian traffic is typically talking on and monitoring what we call VHF frequencies. And military is typically on UHF frequencies. So a lot of times as a commercial guy, I will hear a radio communication go out to a military aircraft that's out there, but I won't hear a response because their response is on a different frequency band that I cannot hear in my airplane. And then vice versa, the same goes for them. So that, you know, that could be one, again, I'm not trying to speculate here. That could be one of the Swiss cheese model aspects to this, so to speak.
And there's no way, Jesse, from what you just said, then for the pilot in the helicopter to directly communicate with the pilot in the airplane?
No. But, you know, those radio calls add to what we call situational awareness. You know, at the times that I've been flying and you hear a traffic call, you hear, hey, you know, the air traffic control calls out to a helicopter, hey, you've got a, you know, a 737 on short final. And you kind of listen up and you kind of try to get your eyeballs looking to where they're going. So I would imagine if they heard that call, again, I'm speculating here, it's just natural for an aviator to kind of turn their eyes towards where they think that traffic's coming from and maybe try to find it.
And
all very, very difficult at night, though.
That's what I was going to ask you. What would the line of sight look like from an airplane versus the helicopter? Because people who fly helicopters say the helicopter would have had the ability mechanically to move very quickly in a way the plane would not.
Yeah, you're dealing with the hardest part, in my opinion, about all this, which is at night over a major metropolitan area. It is next to impossible, especially that low to the ground with all the cultural lighting, all the other lights and stuff that's on the ground, to break out the lights of an airplane easily. I can tell you anecdotally, I even have in most aviators that fly into very big cities have a very hard time even finding the airport until you're basically lined up with the runway. It can be very difficult to pick out, especially if it's nestled right in the middle of a big urban city area. Be very difficult to pick out. So that's why commercial airplanes typically fly on instrument flight rules, because up until you're basically getting close to landing, you know, it can be difficult to pick these things out. Same goes for airplanes. Very hard to see at night against the backdrop of a lot of the airline or a lot of other lighting.
I was going to ask you real quick, can you say that another way? Because you used a term I don't think we're familiar with. You said You said it is next to impossible. Explain that, Jesse. When you are the pilot of an airplane and you are coming in for a landing there, what do you mean?
Yeah, so until you're lined up with a runway and you actually see the runway lights and your airplane is actually lined up in alignment with the direction the runway goes, it can be very difficult to break out a runway. I'll give everyone who flies a lot out there, you know, kind of a way to test this. You know, next time you're flying and you're coming into an airport and it's over maybe a major city, maybe you're flying into New York City, you know, the airports are right there. It can be very, very difficult to pick them out amongst any other city lights, though, until your airplane is lined up. I don't know. Did that explain it a little bit better?
You have the lights in there, and it's dark in the middle.
Let alone another airplane or another helicopter that's in your lane.
Exactly. And you know, you lose all these things at night. You lose depth perception. So, you know, a lot of times you see an airplane, you see blinking lights. I can't tell you if that's a mile away or 5 miles away. That's I can't see anything except the lights. So it can be difficult to see the things you normally are able to see in the daytime.
Commander Jesse Reed, always appreciate your time and your expertise. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. God bless. And of course, you know, times like these, hug everyone a little bit tighter.
Amen.
And
all right. Appreciate your time. Thank you, Commander.
You bet.
Quick break here on Dana and Parks. All right, let's welcome in Channel 9 reporter Matt Fleener, good friend of the program, who is in Wichita, the origin of this flight that crashed last night into a helicopter in Washington, D.C. Matt, thanks for joining us. We know you're on short time. We appreciate it.
You bet. It's quite a surreal day here in Wichita. I was driving into the airport earlier today, and I just had this realization that this is the same path that those 60 passengers took, right? Like, right down the road into the terminal, turning into the garage. And man, it just hit me when that happened. And so, yeah, I think that's the word, right? Surreal is what everybody's telling me here today. We were at the airport a little bit earlier this morning. We actually spoke with some passengers who tangentially knew one of the passengers on board. Wichita is such a small, tight-knit community down here. And there are people who will know people who were on that plane. Just absolute, absolute tragedy.
You know, they were so proud and so excited, Matt, to be hosting the figure skating competition that we're a lot of us are just now hearing about. We're hearing more about the victims. A lot of them hail from the Boston area. What more can you tell us about what's going on the ground today in Wichita?
That's right. Yeah, they just had the skating championships and then a development camp here as well. And so some of those skaters and family members, friends were on that plane back to Washington, D.C. We know some of them were headed back to Boston. And man, just it was heartbreaking. We spoke with a gentleman at the ice rink where they practiced this week, and he was just in disbelief. He had just hosted these folks, and he was in disbelief that this was the plane. And then I spoke with another woman at the airport today, and she's actually flying out to Paris today as a part of a choir group. And she just said to me, she said, when I heard Wichita on the news, Wichita, you know, just she was shocked, absolutely shocked that this plane had come from Wichita to D.C. and then crashed there in the Potomac after hitting that helicopter.
Matt, 14 people on that flight were members of the figure skating team. I watched a news conference today with Nancy Kerrigan. She knew a number of the people on that flight. She was just ravaged with sadness. But every indication I got was this was a brilliantly held, went off without a hitch competition in Wichita, and then it ended in just absolute tragedy.
Yeah, and it's normal, right? I mean, you have these big events that come to town. We have them in Kansas City. You know, people have a great event, then they pack up, you know, maybe Monday, Tuesday, it was middle of the week here, and then they get back on the plane. Everybody thinks that, yep, we're going to get back on the plane, we're going to get back to our destination, and it's going to be fine. And you would think that, right? Because the air system in the United States has been completely safe, you know, from a tragedy like this since 2009, right? So we're talking more than a decade here of just really, really safe air travel. And then this happens and it shakes us. It shakes us all.
Laura Kelly, the governor of Kansas, is going to be in Wichita holding a news conference at 4 o'clock. We plan to take that live. I'm sure Channel 9 does as well. This has really galvanized the sympathy of some of the top leaders in our state.
Yeah, it really has. We've seen, you know, that press conference scheduled from Governor Kelly. The mayor of Wichita had a real moment today. She was there in the press conference room where a lot of the media gathered here at City Hall. And I just simply saw her walk in. She's been doing television interviews all day long. I saw her walk in and just hug one of her staff. And there were no words exchanged. It was just a hug. And it was a really surreal and poignant moment that, you know, the leaders that have to get this city through this and the country through this, you know, we're all human too. And we feel this, we feel it for the city here in Wichita. And this is something that people will remember for quite some time.
You know, the preliminary reports that we are hearing suggest that there could be some sort of early report out in the next 30 days, which seems very fast to me. Matt, we've covered these, unfortunately, these types of disasters over the years. Are right. You getting any word there with respect to the investigation? It feels soon to even be talking about that, but people do want answers.
That's right. And I think, you know, they're obviously going to look into this plane's history. We actually found some history of this specific plane itself. I got into work early this morning and just started digging through the tail number records for this plane. And there was actually another incident. There's been three other incidents with this plane. One, where it did actually have to make an emergency landing in Charlotte back in 2017 when it hit a deer on the runway. So they had to turn around and do an emergency landing. We actually have video of that. It will be showing on the news tonight. At 4, 5, and 6. And so, you know, they're going to look at everything in this plane. They're going to, you know, I heard the black boxes. They're still there in the Potomac. That was the latest from the NTSB. So the main bulk of the focus will be the there in Washington. They guarantee they'll talk to people, most likely aircraft maintenance folks here in Wichita, you know, that kind of thing. But every single indication was that this was a normal flight on the way to Washington and then, yeah, hit that helicopter and the rest here. It's just really tough to hear.
Matt Fleener with Channel 9 KMBC. Do appreciate your time. Thank you for it, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, be well. 913-586-7798. If you want to weigh in, 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So, a question on the text line. How many people died in the airline accident? Would you address that if you could? There were 64 people. 14 of them were figure skaters on the U.S. team. So, 64 people on the plane. There were 3 soldiers in the Black Hawk.
The remains of those 3 soldiers have been recovered. That was one of the things that we got out of that NTSB presser. And also, I would just remind you, so many of the souls that were lost in this tragedy, they're children, Scott.
Oh, sure.
12, 13, 14 years old. Some of them, you know, you're starting to hear some details about the families, and some of them, you know, like went with either mom or dad to go to this competition, which means the other parents stayed back with younger siblings. You know, there's so much devastating loss here. Not that it wouldn't be sad if these people were 70 or 80 years old. I'm not saying that, but these are kids.
Yeah, when you think about the figure skating team that was in Wichita for this competition, it was also a training session for these up and comers. Some of them were alternates on the national team. I don't know that any of them were actually on the national figure skating team, but these were the next ones, right?
The best and the brightest.
Yeah, and sure. So apparently there is, and I watched way too much TV today, apparently there is a figure skating facility camp in Norwood, Massachusetts that Nancy Kerrigan's involved in and a couple of other big figure skating names that you would know.
Yeah.
And they were talking about this young man named Spencer.
Yeah, I saw it.
And Spencer, they were saying, was just, I mean, he was a savant. He just got it. And he had only been figure skating for 3 years. And one of the ladies who ran this facility in Norwood, Massachusetts, said, to be that good as Spencer was after only 3 years is unheard of. He was going to the Olympics. He was going to be the next big name in figure skating. And then they showed video of him. And he was doing these triples, and yeah. You know, I don't figure skate, but
no, but you do. I mean, understand. He was amazing. Everyone listening amazing. Understands how good you have to be at that level of yeah. specifically that sport. It's just devastating.
The mayor of Wichita came out with a statement earlier today, and I quote: "We mourn with all those who have been impacted. We do not know yet the final confirmation on all the individuals who were on that flight. We do now." And of course, we will share that information, but not before families have been contacted. At this time, our community needs to come together to support the family members who have been impacted, to come together in honor of those individuals on that flight. And as a council, we will lead in bringing this community together to pray for our community, but also move our community to know that there are resources. And as a city, we will have additional resources, especially for staff who have been impacted.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the other pilots and the other, I mean, just all of the things.
And the recovery efforts continue.
Yeah, they said on the news earlier today that the number one priority is to recover the bodies.
They are still looking for 36.
The number two priority is to get the black boxes.
Did you read that the three separate parts of the fuselage of that plane were immediately found and were in about waist deep water.
8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the Potomac, and I didn't know this.
I didn't either.
Has very deep portions to it. And then, and this is no silver lining, but it will help in the recovery, is that this plane and this helicopter crashed in the most shallow portions of the Potomac River.
Similar to the Missouri.
Yeah. So it is 8 feet of water that they're searching in, which is going to aid, obviously, in the recovery. It's sad. It's still sad and tragic and awful and terrible and every other word you can think of. But at least, you know, the recovery is going to be a lot quicker than it would have been if this was in 30 or 25 feet of water in a river. I mean, I remember waking up in the middle of the night. And as I'm prone to do, I turn on the news. And I was unaware, as you guys were texting back and forth to each other last night, and take no offense, I had you on silent, we were watching Friends. And I wake up at like 3 in the morning, and I turn on the TV, and I hear about this terrible plane crash in Washington, and that the flight originated in Wichita. I don't think I slept after 2:30 this morning.
I know.
I was glued to the TV.
Doom scrolling until far too early this morning.
Because you want, you know, in the beginning, you want, because they were at 200 feet, okay?
You want to believe
that. You want to believe that there were people on board, children on board who survived.
And I kept refreshing, hoping that I would see rescue numbers.
But, you know, it was amazing how quickly they went from this is a search and rescue to search and recovery. I mean, it didn't take long.
We will keep you updated throughout the afternoon. We know two flight attendants, according to the union, were part of those on board the plane who lost their lives. One of the pilots, I believe it was the second in command, Scott, brand new dad in his 20s, I believe. you know, just I want everyone to just hug your loved ones tighter and just try to send good love and peaceful thoughts that way. I mentioned this on Facebook. We will not tolerate the politicization of this in any way, shape, or form. It will not be tolerated.
No. You know, one of the
we need compassion and leadership right now.
One of the first calls I made today was my pilot in training, Maya.
You were one of the first people I thought about, Scott. And a friend of mine who's a pilot said, I'm thinking about you today. Yeah. Reach out to your pilot friends.
913-586-7798. News with Dan Weinbaum coming your way in 2 minutes here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.